The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, it's a remarkable journey. I think of it of a journey to meditate or to be on this Buddhist path. And to sit down quietly and really spend what I think quality time with oneself and really start seeing what's going on here. But more, I don't know, more importantly, but often for many people at the beginning of this journey, a very important part of this is the mind getting quiet, our body getting quiet, and letting it become still and quiet. But it isn't for the purposes of just having a quiet mind that it's about. And some people who think that's the point will then hold on to a quiet mind and try to go around in life with a quiet mind or feel upset because it's not quiet, it's supposed to be different or something. But for the mind to get somewhat quiet allows a possibility or moves many people in the direction of their minds operating in very different ways than normal. Some people might describe it as a paradigm shift from one way, one whole worldview, a way of looking at oneself and the world, to a whole other one. And one way that that shift begins to happen for some people is when the mind is quiet enough, the mind will realize that there's something more interesting to do than to think. And to lose interest in thinking is a phenomenal step. Sometimes it takes years and years for that to happen. But at some point, to realize that thinking is kind of, at least the way we've been relating to it, it's overrated. And that there's an alternative to always churning out the thoughts or being involved in thoughts. And there can come a time, it isn't like you have to believe this, but there's come a time where it's like so clear that you have a choice. Either stay on track with your thinking or put it down. Or stay on track with your thinking or let the thinking recede into the background because you're no longer interested in it. So it might not be possible to stop thinking, but what is possible to do is to lose interest in always thinking. And that begins, so if when that happens, then if we're no longer interested, we're not feeding the thinking. Because interest is food for thought. Interest means we're curious, we're obsessed, we're invested, we think it's important, we are trying to solve something, fix something, understand something, fantasize something, imagine something that seems, you know, that's important to do. So at some point, it seems like, well, actually, there's something better here to do than take this precious, precious life, I don't know what to call it, but precious life awareness we have, a capacity to pay attention. And there's other things to pay attention to besides thinking. And that's, you know, I think for many people, I mean, a lot of people on the street don't even know they're thinking. You know, that just thinking is like the water the fish swims in. But to really start seeing more and more clearly how the mind is thinking and operating and working is one thing. For some people, it's kind of dismaying to discover, you know, what's going on in there. But what gets really interesting is when we say, well, you know, actually, my mind has a mind of its own, but I don't have to be so interested in that or so involved or be, you know, just let it be. So, for example, at some point it becomes so palpable or so clear that there's a sense of well-being and calm and subtleness that's here in the meditation. And that's much more interesting to focus on than it is to be thinking about, you know, what's for dinner or what happened at work or, you know, all kinds of things you can think about. Some thoughts can be very pleasant and very seductive in their pleasure. But at some point when the mind has a kind of its own pleasure, its own kind of sense of strong well-being, the pleasure of thinking pales in comparison to the pleasure of just being present. In fact, you can feel that there's a loss in getting involved in the thinking. So one way to describe that loss is that as the mind gets more settled and peaceful, there's a sense that the awareness, the mind, the sense of being is broader, more holistic. When we get involved on thinking again, it tends to narrow the world. And sometimes it's very narrow, very tight. And you sometimes can see that. If you're able to get nice and calm in meditation, you know, doesn't have to, and then, you know, your mind has an amazing capacity to burp up new ideas, you know. You know, like it burps and like suddenly it's, you know, and it burps out some really good one. You know, and so suddenly you're like interested in this burp that happened, you know, the thought, the idea. You know, how your high school sweetheart jilted you. I mean, it happened 40 years ago or something, right? And it burped, you know, high school sweetheart, and like, you know, and suddenly you're like engaged and it's important and this, like, everything, it gets contracted. The whole world gets kind of narrowed and tight, and that this particular concern is like, and you can feel that it's a loss. There was this feeling of being whole, being present, being contented, and being here, and now you're not, and the consciousness awareness is tight and narrow and all that. So even the so there's this paradigm shift that can happen as we meditate, where we realize there's something better going on, a better way of being, more healthy, happy, contented, peaceful, that comes from not being so interested or involved in thoughts. And it can be as simple as seeing a thought arise or being involved in some thought and taking a look at that and saying, you know, no, thank you. Not now. Or, you know, it's okay. You say you're thinking, mind, it's okay that you're thinking. There. you know, I know these things are important. There, or something. You know, so it feels acknowledged and, you know, it doesn't feel. And just let it kind of continue doing what it's doing in the background. Quietly in the background. In the foreground of attention, at some point in meditation, the foreground can be the sense of well-being and calm and settledness and peace that comes maybe from focusing on your breath or getting settled or having mindfulness be strong. So you understand, hopefully you understand that a little bit. It gets more interesting, though, this paradigm shift that can happen. At some point, as this kind of deepening of understanding of thoughts and shifting of interest around thinking happens, there can be the clear recognition that most, maybe all, but most of a lot of the thoughts are self-referential. That I'm the main character. It's about me, myself and mine, what my preference is, what's happening to me, what happened to me yesterday, what happens to me tomorrow, what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, sometimes the thoughts aren't that way, but there's a high percentage, I think, most people that somehow. And it's probably evolutionarily very useful. The people who thought more about themselves survived better back then. But we're surviving okay, most of us. So in meditation, then, we start seeing how self-centered or self-involved a lot of thinking is. Now, a lot of religions and people will say you shouldn't be selfish. And Buddhism says that as well, but it's not so much a moral issue, an ethical issue, as it is an issue that as we start seeing the operation of these thoughts and how self-centered they are, it's possible to feel how it limits us. It actually diminishes us rather than keeps us open. We're actually shortchanging ourselves in being self-centered or self-preoccupied or being selfish, oddly enough. And paradoxically enough. And so at some point, we start seeing that the activity, the thinking activity, the contractions in the mind, the emotions that are connected to this, you know, self-oriented kind of approach to life, we start losing interest in that as well. Now that's a big one. Because, you know, you're important. Now this is not to diminish your value, your importance, your preciousness and all that. It's not saying that you shouldn't have a kind regard towards yourself. It's saying that at some point, as the meditation gets quieter and stiller, and this process of losing interest in thoughts happens because there's a better thing going on, we realize there's a better thing going on than being self-centered, than being self-preoccupied, self-caught up. And that's a radical shift to make. I don't think that we get a lot of messages in our society that support that shift to a whole different paradigm. Mostly, the support is, you know, stay being self-involved and self, you know. It's like when I went once many years ago to an auto dealership to try out a new car, and there was still a time, I think, I don't know if it's still the case, but when they didn't necessarily automatically have air conditioners in cars. So they're not automatic. Do all cars have air conditioners now? Does anybody know? Pretty much. Anyway, so I was driving around, and the dealer was driving with me, and he said, "You know, you deserve an air conditioner." And I thought that was a pretty interesting statement. I didn't say anything. I just, you know, I wasn't going to respond to everything a dealer says. But I deserved. So there was that's a little example of, you know, how this reinforcement of self, you deserve. This is, you know, that this is for you to do. And so this paradigm shift in the mind of no longer being so self-concerned, self-preoccupied, thinking about oneself all the time, because we feel, we see that this is actually not a pretty good deal in the moment. Maybe other times it's useful, but in meditation it's not so useful. You know, there's a better way of being. There's more peaceful, and you know, you feel the tension or the stress involved with that kind of thinking and the limitation of it. And so there's a loss of interest in selfing, loss in interest in being self-preoccupied. So if you're still quite interested in yourself, and you find it like your favorite topic, it's fine. This is not criticism of that. What I'm trying to point out is that as this process of meditation goes along, what you'll learn at some point, what we hope you'll learn at some point, that there is another game in town. There's another way of being that's radically different from the way of being that's self-centered, where the self is at the center of the whole game. And as we start realizing the other possibility, the self game then naturally starts losing its allure, its authority, its power, its centrality in our lives. And there's a whole other way of being that arises. Now, some people, when they think about no longer being selfish and no longer being, you know, self-preoccupied and shifting away from that self kind of paradigm, they think that the alternative is to be altruistic. Because somehow times we have this idea that's either being selfish or being altruistic. You know, if you're not being selfish, the opposite is you're supposed to care about people and do things for people. And oddly enough, in this kind of, in the context of the mind getting quieter and losing interest in thoughts and knowing a different way of being, oddly enough, just as thoughts about self are limiting, so are thoughts about others. And just as there can be selfishness, there can be groupishness. There can be collectivishness. You know, and people can be just as preoccupied about others in the world and taking care of them and all that as they are with the self. And it's important to take care of the world. It's important to consider the situations of the world. There's a time and place for everything. There's a time and place for thinking about yourself, a time and place to think, a time and place to think about others. But there's also a time and place to not do that. There's a time and place to be able to let the mind rest. Time and place to allow ourselves to experience and live from a very different paradigm, very different orientation. And there's an orientation that we can make that is not selfish, not self-centered. It's also not other-centered. It's not like we sacrifice ourselves for others. And the alternative, I think of in the terms of situation-centered. We become situation-centered as opposed to self-centered or other-centered. And that is that situation-centered means our awareness, our capacity to be attentive, is centered in the situation, and we're present for where we are, and we take it in, whatever the situation is. And we're part of the situation. So our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, our desires, our situation is part of the situation. So we're not going to deny that's part of it. We're just not going to kind of overemphasize it or be blinded by that. And part of the situation is the wider world, what goes on around us. And how far the concentric circles of situation is maybe varies from time to time, but a great hallmark, a great kind of reference point for this radical different way of being, which is so much more relieving and stress-free and happy, is the immediacy of the situation you're in now, here and now. What's happening now in this situation? To live here and be awake in the middle of it for this situation. And so I'll give you an example of some of the early times in my practice where I got this feeling the delicacy or the specialness of just this being situation present, but just really here. And it happened to be on meditation retreats. And it happened to be that it wasn't about me. But I was there, so paying attention. And there was a Japanese Buddhist monk who spent the 7 days next to me meditating. It was a 7-day retreat. We sat in the same place next to each other. So, you know, we were breathing together, and there was some familiarity, you know, from being together. And he was meditated, very, very strong meditator, and it was nice to sit next to him and feel it. And in the course of this particular retreat, every afternoon we were served tea. And so everyone kept their teacup by their seat. And so when it was time to serve tea, we would bring it out and put it in front of us, and someone would serve tea. And then he would, but the last day we have tea, when the tea is finished being drunk, then the people who serve the tea come with empty trays to collect all the dirty teacups. So that's, you know, just taking care of business. And so it was very nice, you know, they were going collecting them. But this monk next to me, and maybe it's just I say it this way, maybe it sounds a little silly or petty or something, but it had a big impact on me. He had the empty teacup in front of him, and he didn't have to do this. There was nothing that required him to do this. But before the server came to take the teacup away, he, in a very beautiful, very present, very focused, attentive way to the cup, he bowed to the cup. And my mind went, wow. I mean, I'd never seen him bow to a cup. Who ever thought bowing to a cup? But it was the presence and the sense of kind of care and maybe the sense of maybe gratitude he had for that cup. He had a relationship to that cup over those 7 days on a meditation retreat. And somehow he acknowledged it with his bow, that presence for it. And so it was situation-centered. He was really there for that event. He wasn't like, you know, thinking about the servers coming down and, you know, this server's probably going to judge me about how I put the cup on the tray, and I better kind of calculate where it should go on the tray so that they think well of me, and I'm a Zen monk after all from Japan, and everything's, you know, what they think of me is important, and you know, I don't think he was caught up in all that. He was just there, him and the cup, just here. Sometime later, a year or so, 2 years later, it was my turn to be the person who served the tea at these seven-day retreats. So in the middle of the afternoon of the retreat, I'd get up from my meditation, go get the tea, and serve. And it got to be a delicacy to serve the tea. You have this pot of tea, and I could have been thinking about, I better not pour it too fast, too slow, I better not drop it, what are they going to think of me? And, every time I'm seeing all these people offering them tea, and, you know, my status in the monastery is at stake here, and, you know, I could have all these thoughts, right, selfing thoughts. Or I could have had, that person, how could they? They took too much tea. Every day they're taking too much tea, And thoughts, there are all kinds of thoughts, right? These thoughts that we have. But by this point in the retreat, I wasn't interested in all those thoughts. I had better things to do than to be caught up in thoughts and judgments and ideas. What it was better to do was to be situation-centered, to be really in that situation. And to really in that situation without being self-focused and without being other-focused, but being situation-focused. And it was a delicacy to just be there with the person serving tea. There was a human connection between us that was valuable. There was care and kind of empathy or attention. But that empathy and that care and that focus, it felt so good in doing it. It's a simple thing of pouring tea. Was not consciously about myself and wasn't consciously about the other person. It taught me that when we're situation-centered without this preoccupation in self, without preoccupation with the others, that there is a responsivity, there is a way in which our system is set up to respond to that respond appropriately and be with people appropriately and feel for people and be present. It isn't like a blank slate. In fact, our capacity for compassion and empathy gets heightened the more we're situation-centered the less we're self-preoccupied and paradoxically, less other-preoccupied. When we're no longer kind of living through the filter of thinking, but we have a wider lens, there's much more of who we are that has a chance to be present for the situation. Now, people who are, caught up in their thoughts and their concerns, and it's very easy to get impatient and very easy to kind of, where's the point in life and what's going on, and I have important things to do, and I have projects to do, and important things to think and fantasize about and all kinds of things, right? And so in that frustration or that desiring and wanting, it could seem like it's the last thing you want to do is to stop fully and not let the thinking race ahead for the next thing and the next thing. But what I'm talking about here is a paradigm shift that can happen when mind gets quiet enough and clear enough, it sees what's going on. And at this point, it feels so much better to be the other way. The radical thing, and that became kind of the training for me after doing this for a while and meditating for a lot, was it was one thing to have this happen in meditation. It's another thing to allow it to be there in daily life. It's another thing to lose interest in the self-preoccupying thoughts in daily life when there's so much pressure to think and do and get everything. It's another thing to trust the operation of what comes when we're not seeing things through the filter of self, me, myself, and mine. To really trust there's another place to come from. And, some people have to spend some time, a lot of time, maybe working through layers and layers of fear that they carry with them before they can feel like it's okay to be that way. Some people, they have to work through layers and layers of ambition. Some people have to go through layers and layers of orientation towards pleasure and comfort, or avoidance of the opposite. There's all these things that get in the way that are, you know, so meditation is a chance to meet all this, see all this, be with all this, so they get quieter and stiller. And then once we see this paradigm shift, and it's clear enough, then it becomes something that you start recognizing in daily life as well. It's not far away. It's right here. I mean, it's always here. And it can be as simple as, you know, being busy and doing things and then recognizing you're thinking and caught up in something. You say, oh, I know another way. I know that other place. I know I don't have to kind of be so interested in what I'm thinking about now. I can open the attention up more widely to be situation-centered here now. So that's my thoughts for the day. So I don't know if that was clear enough for you, but if you have questions, if you want clarification, or if you want to protest, or if you want anything, please.
So you mentioned several times the sense of constriction and limitedness when you're thinking about self. And one of the things that I became very aware of, it's also very fatiguing.
Yes. Yeah. Too much self-preoccupation can be fatiguing. But it could also be the opposite. I don't know if it's the opposite. Yeah, it can be fatiguing. But I think you keep in mind that some people's lives, I don't know how to say this, are so challenged. Their psychology is so challenged that sometimes thinking about self is enlivening. For example, delusions of grandeur. Fantasies about like all the wonderful things that's going to happen if I win the California lottery. Oh, then, oh, I'll do this and that, I'll save the world, and, you know, I can be the great savior, or, you know, I'll build a big house. And something, and so it can be very enlivening and very pleasant, and so it isn't, you know, it can be better than the alternative, you know, because the alternative not to have that is to maybe be hopeless or do something else. But even that kind of enlivening thinking ultimately is tiring, fatiguing as well. I've had that great place that I know many people who meditate on retreats, I don't know if everyone does this, but I've had it certainly. You know, caught up in some kind of great fantasy, and it doesn't want to stop. And then it goes on and on and on. You know, it's kind of alluring, it's pleasant, until the fatigue sets in. It's like, oh my God, I can't, one more time? Am I going to do this again? give me a break. Thank you.
If you are not supposed to be other-focused, instead situational-focused, how does the concept of compassion kind of fit into all that?
It doesn't fit into it. It arises out of it.
I'll have to think about that some more.
Great. Thank you. You know, it's going to be about compassion. You know, deciding what to talk about in these nights when I come down to teach. You know, there's usually a little journey. I start with one idea, and through the day, different things come along. And so the genesis of this talk, believe it or not, was friendliness. So you probably can't. You probably don't know how that route got from friendliness to this. But for me, there was a connection. And now you ask about compassion.
So a lot of the work I do in the world is very situation focused. And I'm wondering what you have to say about having enough self-reference there to use our emotions skillfully in those situations.
Well, I think if we don't, the idea is to have the attention, that's what mindfulness is about, is the mindfulness needs to, should be ideally be 360 degrees. It should be all-inclusive. And we're an essential part of the situation because we're always in the situation we're in. We go along with the shifting situations. So, but it isn't like we're. So it's more like it's kind of like, if I use an analogy, there's a little light bulb in the middle of our being. And if you turn that light bulb on, the light radiates out and shines outward. But where it hits first is your heart, your muscles, your mind, your brain, and then it keeps going, goes out into the world. So there's something about awareness which begins, is born inside of us. If we really relax and open and allow it to be here, you will recognize what's going on here. There's a kind of a blinders on or preferential attention going on. If we're out there othering with the world, taking care of people, doing things, and not including what's here as part of the picture. So to be centered on one's, to be, I don't know, centered on oneself, to be centered on the situations means that what happens to be that this psychophysical being is at the center of the situation always. You can't not be. You're like the, you know, you're in the middle of the game. You know, wherever you go, you're in the middle of it. But to do that in a selfish way or self-centered way is self-limiting. But if your attention, your awareness, your wakefulness is full and clear, you'll naturally include what's here. And you'll know what you're feeling and your reactions, your tension in your body and your thoughts and the speed and all that. But if you are not relaxed and open, if you've gotten hooked in and into the people you're talking with or dealing with and lose touch here, then it can get difficult. Does that make some sense?
Thank you, yes.
That's why I like the language situation-centered as opposed to self-centered, because we're the center of the situation, but we're not... So we have to... It's very important to keep it in focus, but not in a self-centered way. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I'm liking this situation focus orientation.
Situation-centered, I think.
Situation-centered. So in daily life, what promotes or supports this orientation?
Being happy. There's a lot of things that support it. But I think, you know, in terms of what's realistic, you know, like one answer to your question, I think a lot of mindfulness, a lot of attention, really, really, really taking the time to see what's happening and not worry about the self-centered, other-centered too much now. It's, what I taught today was mostly meant for some of you to be kind of like just kind of a highlight of what will come naturally by itself. You don't have to now force yourself into being situation-centered. But paying a lot of attention and paying attention to how you're self-limiting by being self-centered. So it's not like a should, it's not like bad to be self-centered or judging it being we're a bad person now. But if you can kind of really tune in to the physicality and the, what goes on in the mind, the fatigue and the tension, then it becomes clearer and clearer. Well, this is not a good deal. And we learn and work through it and resolve it and settle it. So I think if I have one answer for you, it would be mindfulness.
I think I've been there sometimes. And so that's, I think, why I'm attracted to this.
And once we've been there, and once it becomes familiar, sometimes through meditation, sometimes there's other things that gives us that state, then at some point it becomes easier to recognize it when it's happening. Because there's a lot of things that are wonderful, that are available to us, but we're so busy with our thoughts that we're not availing ourselves of it. You know, it's a nice day, it's sunny, and, you know, I'm thinking about my taxes I have to do next April. You know, it's July, you know, and I got to do taxes again, and, you know, and how am I going to do it, and do I have the right paperwork, and, you know, and then I don't notice it's a beautiful day. So there's actually a lot more well-being that's available than people realize if we're not so caught up in our preoccupations. And if we know a situation-centered way of being, we know kind of this freedom from self, if that's familiar to us, it might just simply mean that if we kind of look, kind of wake up and look, oh, it's here. How nice. It's not so far away. Okay? Thank you. So we have time for one more? Bill?
And getting back to the idea that thinking about yourself incessantly during meditation can be exhausting. You know, sometimes I notice that when I'm caught up in a big juicy story, that my body has little tensions in it. You know, knitting brow or clenched jaw, or just my whole body may be a little, you know, contracted or tensed or something. And that's not a relaxed.
Sorry?
That's not a relaxed
right.
way to be. And now I'm starting to wonder if maybe if it can work the other way around. If I catch all those little tensions in my face, the rest of my body, and consciously relax them, maybe the thoughts will lose some of their urgency.
That's a great thing to consider, yes. And that's what the Buddha said. The Buddha's instructions the Buddha had around this whole thinking thing is to relax the physical tension that's connected to thinking. It's a little bit like toothpaste, you know, like a tube of toothpaste. If you keep squeezing it, it keeps coming out. You have to stop squeezing it for it to stop coming out. You don't look at it and say, stop, stop, and keep squeezing it. Squeeze harder, you know, squeeze harder, you know. So it's kind of like this tension that we have. That a lot of the tension that comes with thinking is kind of like encouraging more thinking. It's like, and so it's like, you know, it's more and more toothpaste coming out. Just toothpaste.
So you mentioned the Buddha said this. Is this when he says when he talks about relaxing the bodily formations?
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
Okay. So it's really hard for me to stop thinking by catching my thoughts and saying stop.
Right.
Catch that thought again, stop.
Right.
Really hard. That doesn't work yet. So maybe another strategy would be, oh, brows knitting, relax the brow. Brows knitting, relax
absolutely.
The brow. It sounds
absolutely.
Easier.
So being really, some people are spending time being really diligent, touching into the body over and over again, staying connected to the body. Some people will do body scans. And so it's kind of systematic, and you keep on track, and just go through the body and relax, and relax, and just relax everything, relax, until the tube is no longer being squeezed.
I never thought of it in quite this way before. It's great, thank you.
And toothpaste is good in small little dosages, you know, but the thoughts are good too. I have a very friendly relationship with my thoughts, and I like my thoughts. I have a friendly relationship to them. I don't, you know, so thoughts are good. I'm not trying to, you you know, say that you shouldn't be thinking. But it's really nice to know that there's another option. And it's so enjoy. Thank you.
Yeah.